Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU-LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I am your host, Anthony Collada, and we've got another packed show with you. Just because football season ended does not mean the world of sports does. And with our best moment in sports this week, and it actually goes to my alma mater, Bradley University, this week. They faced off against Drake for the share of the Missouri Valley Conference regular season title on Sunday. Bradley was the 2 seed, just 1 game behind Drake, the 1 seed, and, you know, it was the final game of the regular season. Winner takes it all for the conference. And Bradley, one of the best teams at home, especially in the conference this year. I think they've won like 9 of their last 10 at home. And Drake, they lost to him a couple weeks ago. So big matchup here. It's the second one between the two teams for the conference. This was for the 1 seed going into the tournament. And Bradley just once again held it down at home under a sellout crowd. It was the first time in 27 years that Bradley was able to take home the Missouri Valley Conference regular season title. And it's their 8th time since 1950. So history in the making for Bradley. It had been like 8 or 9 years since they had a sellout crowd. So Peoria, Bradley fans, they came out to represent, and Bradley put on a show. Rink Mast continued to be a solid double-double machine for Bradley, putting in 12 points and grabbing 13 rebounds. And Connor Hickman, point guard off the bench for Bradley, really just did it all for him. He scored 19 points, including 4 of 5 from behind the line for 3. He added 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Just one of those guys that really kept the team together. He would always hit that big shot when it was needed, played a little bit of defense with that steal, and really just held it down for Bradley as they defeated Drake 73-61. Just a big moment for Bradley. When I was there over the 4 years, they won 2 Missouri Valley Conference titles, which is the tournament after the season. So Bradley, though, had never won the tournament, obviously, being 27 years, had never actually won the regular season title. So now Bradley goes into the Missouri Valley Conference tournament in like a week and a half, being the 1 seed now. So they get that, I think they get that first round off. And then, you know, now you're the home team. The rest of the conference has to play through you. And Bradley, they've had experience down in St. Louis at the Enterprise Center. They've won two tournaments in the last 4 years, now going for a 3rd in 5 years. So some cool information there on Bradley and my alma mater. So that was super exciting to see there. And in the world of college basketball, you know, it's the Missouri Valley Conference. Not a whole lot of attention is put on that, but, you know, some good basketball still going on and a lot of storylines there. As we kick over to the professional side of basketball, a couple big moves in the buyout market after the trade deadline had passed. Russell Westbrook, who was expected to be bought out by the Jazz after the Lakers traded him, and he ended up finding a home in LA again, but with the Clippers this time. And I was a little surprised that the Clippers, they just decided to throw him right into the starting lineup, and he's playing really well for him right now. The turnovers, that's always going to be a conversation around Russell Westbrook, but, you know, I think that's just a point that you push to the side and you realize you get what you get with Russell Westbrook. But in the 2 games since joining the Clippers and being inserted into the starting lineup, he's averaging 17 points, 9 assists, and 5 rebounds. And you hear anyone from the Clippers talk, and what was their biggest need? It was a point guard. It was a guy that can handle the ball, facilitate it out, someone that understands how to run an offense. And that's exactly what you see Russell Westbrook doing now. It takes a lot of pressure off Paul George, a lot of pressure off of Kawhi Leonard, and allows those guys to kind of do what they do best, play off the ball, let the offense kind of run through them in the pick and roll, in the post-up game, rather than straight iso ball. So a big move there for the Clippers with Russell Westbrook. It's one of those things that everyone keeps hating on Westbrook, but the dude can still play. So Clippers, you know, they keep adding players here as they try to make a push. They're in the 4 seed right now in the West. And then in the other conference, the The Bulls, after not making a single move during the trade deadline, were active in the buyout market, and they added Patrick Beverley, who he's now like 31 years old. He's always been that guy that big energy, he'll play defense, he'll kind of get under your skin, and he's one of those guys that, you know, you hate to play against him, but you'd love to have him on your team. And this is a guy that here, I've wanted the Bulls to grab Patrick Beverley since 2012, because like I said, you love to have him on your team, but it just, it hasn't worked out up to that point. So Bulls finally get their chance now in year like 14 of Patrick Beverley's career, but Bulls add him, and I was really surprised, even more surprised by the Russell Westbrook starting, that Patrick Beverley was also inserted into the starting lineup for the Bulls. So now the Bulls lineup real quick, it's Patrick Beverley and Alex Caruso, who are two defensive guys, the, you know, the rebound energy, that kind of thing, but no offense there at all. And then you have LaVine, DeRozan, Vucevic, your three scorers, which it's one of those things. It's like, how? You still don't have a guy that's going to control the ball and be that typical point guard. Patrick Beverley's not a facilitator, none of those things. But you look at the last two games that since Beverley has been starting, and the Bulls have only allowed 87 points to Brooklyn and 82 points to Washington. I mean, those are like the lowest totals that the Bulls have let up like all season. And it's like all of a sudden, boom, Patrick Beverley makes that difference. And I wouldn't say it's, you know, obviously the point guard and the facilitating and the offense, that's been a struggle for the Bulls. But when you really watch the Bulls play, the trio of LaVine, DeRozan, and Vooch can get it done. Like when they're on and they're playing and they're scoring 70 of 100 points, 120 points, they can play and they look like a real offense. Well, now you add Patrick Beverley, who's that energy. That's the biggest thing with the Bulls is they come out flat way too often and they don't have someone to juice them up and get them going. And how does that start? Yeah, you know, it might be some jawing and whatnot, maybe pick up a technical here or there, but it's on the defensive end. So now you have two big defensive stoppers that create a lot of energy for your team, and it's going to open up, you know, a lot of more back and forth with these offensive stars that the Bulls have. So how much does this continue on for the rest of the season, or is this just kind of like one of those temporary shots of adrenaline? Once it wears off, then you're back to being the Bulls of the entire season. I don't know, but it's definitely interesting to continue to follow. And as we get into the top performers of the week, I do have an honorable mention this week, and it's more of just an overall game. It was the Philly and Boston game on Saturday. Jason Tatum really struggled throughout the game. Tatum, he had 15 points on 6 of 6 shooting. He was 2 of 7 from behind the line, but, you know, he hung with it. That's what you got to do. Shoot or shoot. Came down, final possession of the game. Did he shy away from that final game-winning shot? No, he didn't. He steps up, he takes the three, and he nails it. And now Boston goes up 3. There's like 0.3 seconds left, so not enough time for anyone to get off a shot. Game's over at that point. But obviously, Sixers, they throw it in. Embiid gets the ball, and time had just worn out. It's like 0.2 seconds after. He heaves the ball, and it actually goes in. Like, full court shot. It's like, oh my gosh, we're actually that didn't count, right? Like, you know, it's 0.2 seconds. But, you know, fantastic shot. Just missed overtime there. But, you know, big game. Top two teams in the East. Tatum, he struggles, but he still steps up, makes that game-winning shot. And then Embiid came that close from just an absolutely amazing shot to send him to overtime. So number five for this week is going to the likely MVP for the season, Jokic. He went for 40 points, 17 rebounds, and another triple-double against the Los Angeles Clippers on Sunday in a 134-124 overtime win. Jokic, he continues to put up triple-doubles. This time he scores 40 points on top of it. So, like I said, probably the likely MVP winner for this NBA season, as he's leading the number one seeded Nuggets 43-19, and they're 5.5 games up. So he's really starting to put some distance between him, the Nuggets, and the rest of the teams, the rest of the teams in the conference. So Denver really cruising along. Jokic most likely MVP. Klay Thompson, he went off against the Houston Rockets, 42 points. It's not necessarily something new. We always knew Klay Thompson can shoot it, but he made 12 three-pointers in the game, and that is the most points ever scored without making a two-point basket. Klay Thompson, he was 12 of 17 from three and 6 of 6 from the line. Never had a shot inside the paint. And, you know, sometimes you can look at that and be like, well, you know, that's very one-dimensional. He's not playing the game right. He's taking what he can do, or he's taking what he gets. And if he's open behind the three-point line, we know he can make it. Why not shoot it? So he led the way there, 116-101 win for the Warriors. And then number three moment of the week comes on Sunday as well, with the Lakers come from behind win in Dallas. The Lakers, they were trailing 48-21 in the second quarter. And teams that are 0-138 when trailing by 27 or more points. And the Lakers, they came back to win it 111-108 against the Kyrie, you know, Dallas Mavericks team. Now, Anthony Davis led the way, 30 points, 15 rebounds, but some history there with the Lakers. And you can tell that this team is starting to come together now with Anthony Davis being healthy. LeBron is LeBron, and then all these pieces that they added at the trade deadline really starting to start to mesh together and kind of figure it out there for the Lakers. So they're trying to get into the sixth seed to avoid that playing game and face the Sacramento Kings. They like that matchup. We'll kind of see how that plays out, but Lakers, it seems like they might have figured something out after this trade deadline. And then the number two moment of the week is we had the second highest scoring game in NBA history. And that one came on Friday, I believe it was, with the Kings and the Clippers. It was 176-175. It was a double overtime game, and Sacramento pulled it off. The point guard for the Kings, De'Aaron Fox, put in 42 points and dropped 12 assists. And Malik Monk, the off the bench for the Kings, put in 45 points, including 6 of 12 from behind the arc. And then on the other side, Kawhi Leonard put in 44 points. Paul George had 34 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. Just wasn't enough to, you know, pull it out in double overtime there for the Clippers, but I mean, come on, 176-175. That's insane. I went to sleep at like, you know, second quarter. You know, it was late. That game started at 9. If that's the case, it didn't get over until at least 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, double overtime, that many points. So, really fun, exciting game there, though. Lots of offensive talent. Two teams that are probably going to make the playoffs, going to be, you know, inside the playoffs, not in the play or in that play-in tournament. So two teams that you're going to expect to see come playoff time. And then the number one moment of the week, I feel like you could just put this one on replay because it's Damian Lillard once again, as he put in 71 points on Sunday against the Houston Rockets. Houston, that's two times on this top five performance list that Houston let up a bunch of points. So come on, Houston. But Damian Lillard, 71. He's the only player to score 70-plus points in less than 40 minutes played. This game didn't go to overtime. He wasn't on the court the entire game. He was just out there playing his minutes. He went 22 of 38 from the field, 13 of 22 from three, and then 14 of 14 from the line. And this, he does it every week. Like I said, you might as well just put it on repeat that Damian Lillard is going to find himself in this top five at least once. And with that big game, he's now averaging 32.3 points, which, astronomical, that number's insane. But what really stands out to me is the 7.2 assists that he's averaging. He's putting in 30 points a game and facilitating and passing the ball, getting his teammates involved. That's a point guard. That is a top player in the league. Because here, a lot of these guys, they are talented. Now, I'm not saying they're going out there and they could score 70 on any given night, but these guys can shoot it and they, you know, but it's when you can score it and you can get your team involved. You can win games that way. That's what Damian Lillard does. That's what the star players do. And the funniest thing about all of this probably was Sunday night at this press conference. He was a little late to it, and they asked, you know, whatnot, and he was drug tested right after the game. They made him do a urine test before the game, like the day or two before, and then after he dropped 71, they actually pulled his blood and did that type of drug test. So, obviously, nothing holding Damian Lillard back. If you keep drug testing me, I'm just going to keep putting up 70. So, number one moment of the week, Damian Lillard. And then we got baseball. Baseball is finally back, and we got some big extension news with Manny Machado getting an 11-year, $350 million contract with the San Diego Padres. That keeps him in San Diego until he's 41, which will most likely be the retirement age. If you guys recall, Machado signed a 10-year, $300 million contract back in 2019. So now with the 5 years, after this season, though, of 2023, he would be able to opt out of that contract. So with that, the Padres, they lock him up for this year up until he's 41 years old now. So they've got their third baseman of the future. They keep adding players to that team. We'll see kind of how they make a push this year. And then some new spring training rules to make everyone aware of. The biggest one is going to be the pitch clock. The pitcher. So they have 15 seconds from the moment that the pitcher catches the ball. They have 15 seconds to essentially get rid of the ball towards home plate. And with the batter needs to be in the box, ready, and looking at the pitcher with 8 seconds remaining. So this is one of those things that it's going to speed the game up a lot, and it's going to take a lot of adjusting, not just for the players, because here, that's a big adjustment. We've already seen it. Manny Machado got called out on strikes in his first spring training game. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to do that. And a quick note, they pulled him off to the side after that, and he was joking about it, laughing, like explaining to everyone what he's got to do. Because here, you can get a lot of people that are just, this rule sucks, I hate it, and they badmouth it on, you know, but no. You know, these players, they realize this is the rule, and that's what they've got to do, whether they like it or not. And then you had a game with the Braves and the Red Sox. Now here, it's spring training, so you're not going to go into extra innings, but they actually just completely ended the game. It was the final out of the game of you know, like regular time on a strike three that the batter wasn't ready on. And Braves coach comes out, he's like, well, what the heck just happened here, you know? So just lots of adjusting. It's going to be an adjustment for us watching the game. You know, no more running to the bathroom between pitches. All right, you better sit there and watch an entire inning. If you guys want this game sped up as much as you guys do, you better sit there and watch the entire baseball game. That's all I'm going to say. And then XFL news. We're going to continue with this. Week two, the St. Louis Battlehawks beat the Seattle Sea Dragons 20-18 on a last-second field goal on Thursday. And now former NFL quarterback A.J. McCarron, he is now 2-0 in his XFL career with the St. Louis Battlehawks. The D.C. Defenders beat up on the Las Vegas Vipers 18-6 on Saturday. They are now undefeated at 2-0 as well. The San Antonio Brahmas beat the Cleveland Guardians 30-12, and they get former NFL receiver Hines Ward his first career win as a head coach. And then the final game of the week, the Houston Roughnecks, they continue to stay undefeated as well with a 23-14 win over the Arlington Renegades. So some more XFL news there. I believe it's an 8-week season. So going to continue following along with that and following along with some of these former NFL players as well. I got a couple quick notes around the world of combat sports for those of you that enjoy that. We do have a former UFC double champion making his return to the UFC. Henry Cejudo, who held the belt at two different weight classes, is making his return later this year in the bantamweight division for the belt against current belt holder Aljamain Sterling. Sterling, one of those guys who he's really worked his way up into that division. Some big wins over Peter Yan, some other talented guys there that he just keeps running through. And now you get the double champ, Henry Cejudo. He's a big-time wrestler. Big-time UFC dude. I never got to watch that guy. I was a little, you know, green going into the UFC when he was out. I'm excited to kind of see what all the hype with this guy is about. And then Aljamain Sterling, he can do it. So that one should be a good one for that bantamweight belt. And then in boxing, you had the all-incumbent Tommy Fury versus Jake Paul fight. Jake Paul, the former YouTuber. Tommy Fury, the son of one of the greatest heavyweight boxers of all time, Tyson Fury. This is one of those fights that had been teased and, you know, back and forth, arguing, whatever, blah, 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 for so long. They finally had it agreed upon, and the date finally came. And I would say, you know what, we'd got our money's worth. I didn't pay a pay-per-view, but I did watch it. Anyone that bought a ticket, you know, if you understand what you are buying for, I would say you weren't disappointed. It was an exciting fight. It went the full eight rounds. Some decent hits here. Jake Paul, he did knock down Tommy Fury. They said it. They knocked him down twice. I noticed once, and it was kind of a slip. Didn't keep Fury down too long. But, hey, you know, that's what happens on those scorecards. But at the end of the day, Jake Paul, he landed more punches. He landed 31% of his shots to only Fury's 29%. But Fury was just a more active fighter, more comfortable. You could tell he's a little bit more seasoned in there, and it's something that he had been taught for a longer part of his life, as he landed 88 shots to only Jake Paul's 44. And it was a split decision at the end of the day. I think it could have won either way, but ultimately Tommy Fury did end up coming away with the victory in that one. Jake Paul, of course, had a rematch clause in the contract, so he has already said multiple times that he plans to enact that. So I guess we just sit back and wait for Tommy Fury, Jake Paul number two then for that. So a decent fight there. Tommy Fury takes it by split decision. And as we wrap up our show, fun fact here, it's a little off-season note with the NFL. It's something I was just stumbling upon, and I'm like, wow, really? So a couple names. Obviously, there's a bunch of names that you could add on this list, but quarterbacks that have never thrown a pick six. And you would think, the couple of these guys, you would think they have. Jamarcus Russell, the guy with the Raiders who played like 10 games. They hand him tapes for film, and they ask him the next day, hey, would you study? And he told them blitz packages when they handed him blank tapes. Like, okay, you would think that guy would probably throw a pick six. He did not. Mitchell Trubisky, yeah, for all you Bears fans out there, he actually never threw a pick six. I do think he came close one time, but he actually made the tackle. But yeah, another guy. Bears traded up number two for him. Never panned out. It wasn't the right move. Again, guy you would think, but he hasn't. Another one, kind of that same boat is Trubisky, Daniel Jones with the New York Giants, a guy that I think led the league in interceptions his first year or something. Again, never threw a pick six. Crazy. A couple more names, Brock Osweiler, Johnny Manziel, and Mason Rudolph, the guy for the Steelers. Now, quick note, Mason Rudolph, he never threw a pick six, but he was hit upside the head with his own helmet. You guys recall a couple weeks or a couple years ago, it was a Steelers-Browns game. And obviously, AFC North, two divisional opponents, tempers are going to go high. Well, end of the game, it was getting towards the end of the game and, you know, whatever. They're a little testy. And I don't remember what was said, who said what first, but Myles Garrett was triggered one way or the other. And he yanks Rudolph's helmet off and whacks him upside the head with it. So, hey, congratulations, Mason Rudolph. You've never thrown a pick six, but you were whacked upside the head with your helmet. But again, like Brock Osweiler, Johnny Manziel, two of these guys that, here, they were not good NFL quarterbacks. And they are guys that turn the ball over a lot on some bad teams. Just like what you would think is the perfect formula for a pick six. And some of these guys, they just never did it. I don't know if that's luck, if that's skill, but just a note that I found kind of interesting, something fun to chew on as we wrap up our Sports Zone show this week. We'll be back next week with a lot more information. It'll be a full week of NBA after the trade deadline only had a 4-day week this week. And then spring training baseball is going to get closer and closer to regular season baseball. Keep up with the XFL. And hey, who knows what else we're going to get in the world of sports. So stay tuned for the Sports Zone next week.